Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Friday. It's College Football Friday, NFL stuff too. 1 hour from now, a blazing five. This is The Herd, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. I'm going to keep my facial hair. 2021, I paid off my bet with Joy Taylor this morning. I gave her initially I gave her 80. She called me out and said, hey, honey, bring the sugar.
Gave me the cash, and it was $20 short. I'm like, wait.
Colin, as I turned my back, Colin, that's 80. I'm like, hold on. My 20s suck together.
He tried to short me. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
I stayed up all night.
I'll tell you, I say this sincerely. I would not have gotten through this year without you.
I wouldn't have gotten through it without you. It was great to be here. It was definitely the biggest sense of normalcy, being able to do the show.
Yeah, you've been an unbelievable partner.
Thank you.
I feel incredibly grateful, profound gratitude working with Joy Taylor and the staff here. But we got through it. There'll never be a year with less sports for 5 months, and we got through it. So
yeah, we did.
Way to go, us.
We made it.
All right, couple huge college football games. I don't start with college football much. Let me talk about this. Notre Dame plays Bama right after our show. Notre Dame's going to lose. Bigly. It's the year of bigly. They're going to lose bigly. And that's going to be okay, but SEC fans are going to point fingers. Overrated, overrated, overrated. No, what's overrated has been everybody in the SEC for the last 10 years, not named Alabama. Let's take the last 5 years. Here's some Saban stats for you. He's 39-3 against the SEC. Average margin of victory, 20 points. But, Colin, that's counting the dogs in the conference. Okay, let's go to the big, big, big old Southern boys, Florida. Last 7 meetings against Florida, Nick Saban 7-0. Average margin of victory, 22 points. Georgia, on my mind. Okay, last decade, 5-0 against Georgia, 2 touchdowns, the average score. Never been an SEC coach to go to the NFL and crush. A lot of good players, not a lot of great coaches. Spurrier bombed in the NFL, so did Saban. It's a mostly lousy coach conference with unbelievable players. But you know who isn't afraid of Alabama? Clemson. Last 4 times they've met, they've split 2-2, and Bama's got a negative point differential. Clemson's also faced 10 times a team not called Alabama in the SEC. They're 9-1 against the SEC as Clemson, most by blowouts. Notre Dame has higher academic standards. It's harder to get in. Most of Bama and LSU's classes would struggle to get in. They wouldn't qualify. It's hard there. It's an amazing, amazing school. For them to win 10 games is unbelievable. And they don't play Troy State 3 times at Notre Dame. They don't play the Citadel. No, they don't. Their out-of-conference games are like Stanford, USC, not top 10 programs currently, but teams with a history of putting great players in the NFL. They don't get that off week against Panera Bread, where they don't have to play starters and they get everybody healthy for the next week against Auburn. Everybody loves to point fingers every time Alabama rolls somebody. You know who they've been rolling for 12 years and humiliating? The SEC. Yes, this is Alabama's best team, arguably, and it's certainly their best offense. But 50 coaches have been fired since Saban's arrived. Auburn, how's that program doing? Just fired their coach and hired about the 8th choice. How's Tennessee? Bad. What else is new? South Carolina fired their coach. Florida just got rolled by Big 12 Oklahoma. Coach humiliated himself by saying game didn't count. Stop it. Nick Saban's the best college football coach ever. Don't point fingers today. Notre Dame winning 10 games in a remote, cold weather, academically rigid, with a religious awning hanging over it, is unbelievably difficult. I say this about Northwestern and Stanford. You win 8 games, tip of the cap. It's different other places. Some places are college football powers. That's okay. I'm not blaming them. But let's just have context here. Notre Dame has played in the last couple of years Georgia. Played them twice. Georgia is the second best program in the SEC. It's a great school. It's a great Athens is amazing. Unbelievable. If you've never been there, it's one of the great environments. I've been there twice. One of the great environments in college football. Notre Dame's played them twice. 20-19, 23-17. They've stacked up pretty good. When Notre Dame gets rolled today, don't point fingers. Have context. Everybody not named Clemson gets rolled by Alabama. They've got more good players. They can get them all in. They develop the hell out of them. And they got the best coach in college football history. Bama wins comfortably. But go ask Florida, Georgia. Texas A&M should have been in the playoff. You played Bama too and got destroyed. All right, so the other game I think is going to be really competitive. Joy doesn't, I do. I think Ohio State's going to give Clemson problems. I like Ohio State's defensive front, and I don't love Clemson's offensive line, and I think Trevor Lawrence will be under duress. But what you are watching with Trevor Lawrence today, and it's why I think Clemson probably figures out a way to win close, is the best college football quarterback ever. And bruh, it ain't close. 34-1. Vince Young gets an argument. He threw 44 touchdown passes. Trevor has 88 and counting. Tim Tebow had 6 losses. Didn't play much as a freshman, nor did Vince Young. As a freshman, Trevor Lawrence walked on the field and humiliated Nick Saban 44-16. He was 19 years old. And it wasn't an average game. You see, Nick had 3 top 22 players in the draft that year on defense. Nick had 6 weeks to prepare for him. And the 19-year-old ate Nick Saban's defense, filled with elite NFL players alive. Trevor Lawrence is easily the greatest college football quarterback of all time. Just compare him to Vince Young and Tebow, who maybe go 2 and 3, or a Tommy Frazier. This is a 90-touchdown pass, unbelievable as a freshman. There has been no dip since. Oh, he lost to LSU. Yeah, a team that got 14 players, a record, drafted into the NFL, probably the greatest college football team of all time. The idea, Andrew Luck, I think, redshirted as a freshman. Trevor Lawrence threw 30 touchdowns, 4 picks, but it was the ACC. Let me remind you, he humiliated Nick Saban. You are looking at a kid, we'll never see this again. I don't think we'll ever see a kid this good. He will go into the NFL next year, and this will sound hyperbolic. He will be a top 12 quarterback in the NFL. Think I'm crazy? Justin Herbert already is. You ask every NFL and the GM, Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins, Justin Herbert. It's not close. 32 of 32, take Herbert. I said when Zion Williamson came into the NBA, I said he will be at some point in the first year a top 25 player. I could not believe the pushback. He averaged over 22 points in 28 minutes. Have you seen Zion this year? He's a top 20 player production-wise in the NBA. So enjoy the games today. Yes, Alabama's going to roll Notre Dame like they've been doing to everybody in the SEC, everybody in college football not named Clemson for the last 12 years. And Ohio State's going to keep it close and probably not make it the most comfortable afternoon for Trevor Lawrence. But there's never been anything like that, ever. 34-1. And this year, he's not working with a very good offensive line, sans his left tackle, who's excellent. So there you go. Speaking of offensive lines, David Bakhtiari, who has been the best pass-blocking left tackle in the NFL last 4 or 5 years, is now out for the season for Green Bay. What does that mean? It means something. If you did not hear Greg Cosell yesterday, he brought up a very interesting point about Josh Allen. And I know you're all crushing the Dallas Cowboys. I get it. But I'm going to tell you why I'm kind of rooting for them to make the playoffs. Not saying they will. but I'm kind of rooting for them. And I don't root for the Cowboys much. That's coming up. Happy holidays. Happy New Year for Joy and everybody. In L.A., it's The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
M-Drive, supplement I take every day. M-Drive, powerful ingredients backed by science. Free shipping, 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't let age beat you. Refine your prime with M-Drive. So Notre Dame's going to get rolled just like everybody in the SEC today, probably by 3 touchdowns. I'll take Clemson by like a point or two, but I think Ohio State's the side. I also think it's a low-scoring game. Cannot wait for those. Top of next hour, Blazing 5. Never had a losing season. I'm 1 under .500, so we're rooting for it. Yeah, Joy and I were talking during the break. Like, there are certain universities in this country, like Stanford. I was talking to David Shaw one time, their head coach, about, you know, how hard it is to win at Stanford. And he said, you know, we look at transcripts before game film. I mean, there's no reason to recruit a kid if he can't get in. And he goes, secondly, we never have 85 players on scholarship. We can't get 85 guys that qualify for Stanford that are good enough to play in our conference. So it's not a knock on anybody else. It's just the reality of there are these Northwesterns and Stanfords and Notre Dames that are very rigorous academically, and they play by a little different rule. So if Notre Dame wins 10 games to me, God bless them. I mean, these are schools I could not get in out of high school. I couldn't get into Notre Dame out of high school. Couldn't. I couldn't. I tried to get into Duke. I couldn't get into Duke. We just have to be honest about this. There are these schools that ask more of young people, and they're powerhouses academically. So David Bakhtiari he's going to make the Hall of Fame. He's a left tackle for the Packers. He's now, it's just gutting. He's out for the year. I hate to see that. Big guys heal slowly. Practice injury, knee injury, he's out for the season. But I can see all the Packer fans lining up to make excuses. He missed 3 games earlier this year. Here were Aaron Rodgers' stats. 71% completion percentage, 11 touchdowns, no picks, passer rating of 130. David Bakhtiari is the best pass-blocking left tackle in the NFL. Probably has been for 2 or 3 years. He is not worth a point in the NFL. He may be worth a half a point, maybe. It didn't change the line yesterday much. Not that I can tell. Aaron Rodgers, in the 3 games he missed this year, was sacked twice. Now, it's the Bears. It's Khalil Mack. So Khalil Mack will be playing against a backup. That is never good news. And I imagine Aaron will get sacked by Khalil Mack this weekend, and it will be problematic, at least early. The Packer coaches will have to adjust to it. But let me give you Ronnie Stanley, Baltimore. He's another first ballot Hall of Fame left tackle for the Ravens. He's absolutely he's a Notre Dame guy, by the way, I believe. Phenomenal player. Baltimore's offense struggled when he was healthy this year. Baltimore's rush-centric offense with Ronnie Stanley out is the hottest in the NFL. So Aaron Rodgers and Lamar Jackson are nimble enough that if they're missing their left tackle, they can adjust. Now, the Colts have a left tackle, Anthony Costanzo, who's very good. The Colts offense has struggled when he's out, but that's Phillip Rivers, who is about as nimble as my coffee table. So that's a different situation, but it's not going to affect. Remember, the year Aaron Rodgers won the Super Bowl, you remember that year, Charles Woodson got hurt in the Super Bowl. They had several key players that year and in the playoffs on the IR. So I don't think it's season-ending. I don't think it lessens their chance to win the Super Bowl. Most of the really great edge rushers in the NFL right now are in the AFC. Joey Bosa is terrific. Myles Garrett is incredible. T.J. Watt for the Steelers, I think, is unblockable. So to me, outside of Khalil Mack, most of your great edge rushers are on the other conference, the other side that Green Bay would not face until the Super Bowl. Here is Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
So the Browns were without their top 4 wide receivers last week when they lost to the Jets.
Yeah.
But they will get them all back for their crucial matchup with the Steelers on Sunday.
And a linebacker, too, I think.
Yes. Jarvis Landry, Rashard Higgins, Kadarius Hodge, and Donovan Peoples-Jones all have been activated off the COVID list and are available on Sunday. Malcolm Smith, tight end Harrison Bryant, and corner Denzel Ward were placed on the COVID list this week. They are 8.5-point favorites, according to Fox Bet, right now.
I would take Cleveland. You know, we had a discussion this morning. My staff tried to convince me that if Baker lost, that the Browns would not pick up his option. And I said, I think when he beat Tennessee, people felt sort of like, we'll pick up his option. I don't think this is a make or break, pick up the option for Baker. Now, if he comes out and does some really sophomoric stuff and is awful, because he did lose to the Jets. But I tend to think, you know, the Rams and the Browns lost to the Jets. The Jets have some real good defensive players, and it's hard to get fired up for the Jets. I think Cleveland's going to be fired up for the Steelers. I think they're going to play really well, and I think they're going to win comfortably.
Well, they don't have to win. They need to win if they want to control their own destiny. They can still make the playoffs if the Colts lose to the Jaguars.
They won't.
And if the Titans lose to the Texans and the Ravens and Dolphins both win. So there's a lot of chips that have to fall in place if they lose. I do think that there's something to how Baker plays. Baker overall this season has shown that he is very capable. When he has the right pieces around him, he is a distributor, and that's not, there's nothing wrong with that at all. It's not a critique. I think we all know that Baker Mayfield is not Tom Brady. Like, he's not Aaron Rodgers. That's okay. There's only one Tom Brady and one Aaron Rodgers and one Patrick Mahomes. You don't have to be that to have success in this league and have a long career. So I think what the Browns have been this year is a success either way.
Absolutely.
Normally I'd be much harder on the Browns, but it is a new head coach in a COVID shortened season.
Yeah.
This is the, I can't keep track of the third system that Baker has had to learn.
Yeah. If Cleveland makes the playoffs, I think they will, and they lose their first game, I have no problem with it. If you go look at the history of rookie head coaches going to the playoffs and having to face veteran head coaches, just look who's in there now. You're going to have an Andy Reid. You're going to have a Mike Tomlin. You're going to have a John Harbaugh. So, I mean, Stefanski getting to the playoffs is an amazing...
I mean, it's a massive success.
Massive.
I think even if they don't make it, it's still a successful season for the Browns. If this was their second year, it would be a different conversation.
Yeah.
But I would give them a pass this year. Last week against the Jets, like, you have all your receivers out. Look, everybody's dealing with the same circumstances this year. It's 2021 now, but this season with COVID. So you can't make excuses, but that is a factor in why they lost. To your point, it's hard to get up for the Jets. Like, they could have won and should have won that game regardless. They were still the more talented and better team. But it happens. It's the NFL. 8.5 is a lot of points.
I'm going to take Cleveland to cover. I am.
I understand Mason Rudolph is playing, and trust me, I have no confidence in Mason Rudolph whatsoever. But
in fact, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's going to be like 28-10. It's going to be a blowout Cleveland.
Blowout?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to score much because I think Myles Garrett's playing. Cleveland has to play for more. And I think, frankly, let's not kid ourselves. Unless the weather's a factor, Cleveland right now has been a better team in the last 6 weeks outside of the Jets game.
That is fair. So the Broncos have been searching for their franchise quarterback since Peyton Manning retired after the 2015 season. In fact, they're 32-47 since, with no playoff appearances and 9 starting quarterbacks, not counting the game they had to play without a quarterback.
Right.
So needless to say, they've been struggling at that position since Peyton left. Drew Lock hasn't been as great as the team expected, or really we expected.
I think he plays
this year.
He's Jay Cutler. Big arm, plays way too casual, a little too concerned about being cool. I don't like it. And by the way, Herbert in the division now, Derek Carr, Patrick Mahomes, that's the standard. That's the 6 games against your division rivals. He's got to grow up, and he's got to stop playing so loose and casual. It's very Jay Cutler.
Well, John Elway still believes he has a lot of potential. He said, obviously, he's been very inconsistent and showed some flashes. And we still have high hopes for Drew with a good offseason, a lot of hard work this offseason, a lot of film study, that he can come back and be a very good quarterback in this league.
Oh, you know who DM'd me yesterday? Barry the lead. Joe Burrow.
Yes, Barry the lead.
He
How do we
slid,
open the show with that?
Joe Burrow slid into my DMs.
Is he comfortable with you sharing?
Yeah,
but
I mean, it was like guy talking. He just said, hey, I wish I had my phone here. He said, he's such a good kid. So when he got hurt, I texted him. I said, it breaks my heart. I'm rooting for you.
Right.
This is going to be the low point. You're going to kick ass for 10 years. And he's thank you very much, sir. And then he texted me the other day. He goes, I made a promise I would come on your show. I said I would, and I want to fulfill my commitment to your show. So, and I was like,
oh,
I like
that's
that
so sweet.
That's good parents, good kid. So
he's so responsible.
I cannot believe I buried that.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Joe Burrow. And I'm sorry if I share this and you didn't want to, but you're such a good kid.
That's so nice.
I know. So I want to bring him on next week based on, you know, his schedule. My schedule
people usually hate the media.
No kidding. And they shouldn't, because I am America's honesty broker.
Finally, J.J. Watt has been one of the most dominant defensive players during his decade-long NFL career, but with only 1 year remaining on his contract, he's not sure what his future with the Texans will be.
There's a whole lot of unknowns, so we'll see what happens. I don't have any guarantees left in my contract, so something's got to happen one way or another, we'll see.
He's in his 10th NFL season. He has 1 year left on his 6-year, $100 million contract extension, and he's set to make $17.5 million in base salary. He has no guaranteed money remaining, so the Texans could cut him and save $17.5 million against the 2021 salary cap.
So he's a little like Matt Stafford, except better version. He's going to get into the Hall of Fame,
yes.
And he's got stacks of money, because not only has he made a lot of money in Houston, you can buy a nice home there. There's no state tax.
He has endless endorsements as well.
Okay. I'm J.J. Watt. And I don't know how his contract works. J.J. Watt has earned the right and deserves to play for a Belichick, an Andy Reid, a Sean Payton. So, like, it's the Stafford thing. Dude, you got your money and you got your stats. Go win games. Matt Stafford's too talented not to win games. J.J. Watt deserves to go somewhere. I don't think money matters to him. It's like when Greg Olsen and I were talking when he was in Carolina and he was deciding on teams. I said, Greg, Pete Carroll Hall of Fame, Russell Wilson. I said, Greg, you've worked so hard. You deserve a Hall of Fame coach and a quarterback. J.J. Watt, and maybe Seattle's the place. You know, I'm from there. J.J. Watt, to me, has earned and deserves a great last 2 years. It's the Kevin Garnett thing.
Of course.
Okay, you got the money, you got the points. Go play with the Celtics and win.
Well, it's kind of on the Texans, because it's $17.5 million against the salary cap. They have no guaranteed money remaining, so they could cut him. Essentially, they could come to an agreement. I want to leave. It's time to part ways.
Could they trade him?
Could
you go to J.J.
Because he has 1 year left on his on his deal.
I would go to if I was ran the Texans, I'd go to J.J. Watt and say, you've been amazing for our community. Give us three teams. We'll try to do a deal.
I agree. I think it's really going to depend on what coach they bring in, because, you know, certain coaches like to come in. You know, you have the quarterback, right, in Deshaun Watson. But sometimes they like to come in and set a whole new tone. Well, and veterans can sometimes be a deterrent to that. Not that J.J. Watt is not an incredible locker room guy. Of course he is. But depending on who comes in, like, that chemistry with the veterans is a real factor.
Also, they're paying their left tackle and quarterback. The new coach may just say, I need cap space. I'll pay a left tackle quarterback. Let me draft. If it's a defensive guy, I know personnel. I can go get a cheap young J.J. Watt. Maybe not J.J. Watt, but 85%.
Yeah, so, and I know Texans fans probably don't want to hear this, but
I think there's certain guys. I watched Kevin Garnett for years. You watch Matt Stafford. You watch J.J. Watt. It's like, Matt, take less money, go play to New England, and go win games.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to see J.J. Watt on a team that has the potential to win a Super Bowl.
Right, like, not just,
he's a guy that you want to see have a ring.
Look at Carlos Dunlap. Goes to Seattle, and it's like, oh, he's on television every week. Oh, look how good Carlos Dunlap is.
And, yeah, they literally made an impact. It's not so much that he's flying around. Like, he changed that defense.
Oh, absolutely. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
I'm going to say something nice about the Dallas Cowboys later today. I don't even know what's gotten into me. Top of the hour, Blazing 5. My buddy right now joining us live, Albert Breer, Monday morning quarterback. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. So we said this yesterday. It's one of these awful hypotheticals. But I said, let's just think about it. So Ryan Fitzpatrick's out. Tua's playing. Yep. Buffalo's really good. So we look at the ease in which Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, and we look at the dynamic nature of Josh Allen. And Tua's averaging 160 passing yards a game. Their defense is great in Miami. Their coach is great. Their special teams are great. They're missing the piece. Tua goes out Sunday and looks small, is not dynamic, shrinks. You'd bench him if you could. They've got a number three pick. And, Albert, they're never with Brian Flores going to get a number three pick again. What if Tua struggles? Is it nuts to think they would use that on a quarterback?
No. I think they've shown us. I mean, he like Brian Flores has given us the answers to the test. They're willing to Buck convention. They're willing to think outside the box and how they've handled their quarterback situation this year. They went to Tua in the first place in a spot where no one would go to a young quarterback. They were winning when they did it. And since they've shown a willingness to go away from a young quarterback when everybody would say, well, you don't want to damage his confidence. You don't want to get into his head. What do? They go to Ryan Fitzpatrick in an effort to win games. And so I look at the organization and the way Chris Greer and Brian Flores have worked over the last 2 years, and what an outstanding job they've done.
Yeah.
Front to back, just building that team up, building the culture, everything else. I don't see why you wouldn't say that they would buck convention here and say, you know what? We like Tua. He's a good player. We can find something better. And I'll tell you too, I mean, Colin, having talked to some executives who are watching this guy and evaluating this guy, they're seeing what I think a lot of people in the general public, maybe you and me included, are seeing, which you're not seeing elite traits right now. I mean, he just sort of looks average in a lot of ways out there. So you're right. Like, I don't think they're going to be picking this high again under Greer and Flores. And so this might be their last opportunity to get an elite young quarterbacking prospect. So, I think that when we get to the offseason, we may be talking about them evaluating guys like Justin Fields and Zach Wilson up against Tua Tagovailoa.
So it's interesting because Jalen Hurts, meanwhile, has been more dynamic. They're averaging 440 yards of offense since he started. That's 100 and maybe 15 more than Carson Wentz.
Yep.
You know, the easy proposition is just take Carson Wentz, put him again with Frank Reich, and go with Jalen Hurts. And I don't know if Jalen Hurts is going to make it, but I'll tell you, the arm's not an issue. He's made throws. I mean, with no preseason, not a lot of first-team snaps, 440 yards of offense. It doesn't seem crazy to move off Wentz and go with Jalen Hurts, does it?
No, and I think we have to see what this looks like coming out of the season. The owner's not happy with where they are. I think there's going to be some level of change. Now, I'm not saying head coaching change necessarily. I'm not saying GM change. But I think there's going to be some level of change in the football operation. Maybe some offensive staff changes. Maybe Doug Peterson's forced to bring in an offensive coordinator. So I think that's all going to go into the decision that you make in Carson Wentz. And I sort of think, Colin, now maybe you look at this and you say, okay, Wentz's deal is tradable, but is it really worth giving up on him for a third or a fourth round pick? Or should we swing the doors open to a competition if we can't get more than that in 2021 and just let Hurts and Wentz compete? That way you get a final answer on Wentz, on who he is as a player, and you give yourself a second shot with Jalen Hurts. One of the things that really sticks out about Jalen Hurts, just having talked to people and the amazing kind of ascension that he's had since he got benched at Alabama, the rate of improvement is really, really impressive. And if you talk to Lincoln Riley, you talk to Quincy Avery, his personal throwing coach, you talk to the people in the Eagles organization who scouted him, where a lot of other teams saw a guy who had a ceiling as a passer, the people who liked him in that Philly building looked at him and said, the rate of improvement from Alabama to Oklahoma, and then just from Oklahoma to what he did in his pro day, which was right before COVID hit and shut everything down, was dramatic. And we're seeing, I think, more steps forward from Jalen Hurts. So I think the Eagles owe it to themselves to get a good look at Jalen Hurts. And if that improvement continues, and if they can't get like a haul for Carson Wentz, I certainly see where you could look at it if you're the Eagles and say to yourselves, you know what? Best thing for the organization, give ourselves two shots at having the quarterback of the future here. This way we get a final answer on who Carson Wentz is as a player, and we're giving Jalen Hurts a shot.
Yeah, you know, I should know better. I'm a dad. You see these huge leaps with your kids when they're 18, 19, 20. And I was one of those guys with Jalen Hurts. I'm like, he's a runner, not a thrower. And then I watched him 2 weeks ago, and I'm like, oh, he made two sideline throws. I'm like, no, he's fine. Like, we judge these kids at 20, and we just give up. Like, people don't improve. Here's another situation, and you know this very well, Albert Breer joining us. And Cam Newton's not coming back. You can't convince me of that. Belichick's not going to go through this stuff again. Boy, that Matt Stafford stuff feels so right. It feels so right. Give me your kind of – I mean, they don't draft high enough, Albert. They're not going to get one of the top four quarterbacks. They're just not. Next year, off season, what's New England going to do at quarterback?
I think they're going to look for an upgrade. I don't think they're averse to bringing Cam back. I don't think they'll bring him back without competition, though. He's been perfect as a person in the building. Like, as a player, obviously not. But as a person, he's done everything that they wanted. He's been a great teammate, a great leader, all of that. He's checked every box in that regard. And so I think Bill, to some degree, probably feels like, you know, if Cam wants to come back and compete for the job, we're going to leave the door open for that. But they are going to look for upgrades. And I think sort of, you know, big piece of this is going to ride on who's available to them. And, you know, Matthew Stafford, his availability is going to ride on whoever the next coach and general manager are. But he's got background now in New England system, having played for Matt Patricia. And he could be kind of what, like what Alex Smith was for Andy Reid in Kansas City, where you can win with him and he gets you to the next guy. And he gives you flexibility where you don't have to overreach for a guy in a certain year. So I think there's good logic there. And then the other name I think you have to take a look at is Jimmy Garoppolo. And if San Francisco, say, has a shot at getting Sam Darnold out of New York, do they do that? And then maybe Jimmy Garoppolo comes available. That'd be another name to watch. And then if you want to look further down the line, Jacoby Brissett's another guy who, you know, potentially could be a stopgap because he's got background there. But I think the Patriots are going to look at every level at quarterback here, both veteran, rookie, reclamation project. I think they're going to look at every single answer they possibly can to try to at least get back up to level water at the position.
By the way, do you have a vote for Coach of the Year and MVP?
I don't, no.
Okay, because I think I'd go, it's hard, Sean McDermott probably, or Brian Flores. It depends if Miami loses. Whoever wins that game, I'd probably give Coach of the Year to. I would give Aaron my MVP, Josh Allen 1A. If you had to do Coach of the Year and MVP, where you go?
I think I'd go with Brian Flores, just based on where they were at the beginning of the year. It's really hard to ignore, Colin. I mean, this was... If we're going back, you know, 16, 17 months, like, it's easy to forget this. That was a freaking teardown. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, they lopped off Minka Fitzpatrick and Laremy Tunsil in September of that year. Like, think about that. Those are two high-end players, and those were the last pieces of the teardown. So to be back in this position this quickly, I'm so impressed with what Brian Flores has done. And how quickly it's happened and how the team responds to him too. Like, we talked about those unconventional moves. Like, pulling your rookie quarterback in game and putting the veteran back out there, and the way the teams responded to that, I think it's so impressive what we've seen from Brian Flores this year. So he'd be my Coach of the Year at this point, again, pending what happens on Sunday. And I think you got to give the MVP to Aaron Rodgers. You look at the statistics, he's got better numbers than Mahomes. You look at what's around him. I think he's got less around him than Josh Allen or Mahomes have. And I think you see what you're seeing here is that second year in the Shanahan offense. It happened with Matt Ryan in Atlanta. He won an MVP in his second year under Kyle Shanahan there. It happened with Jared Goff in LA. He went to the Super Bowl in his second year under Sean McVay. I think that's very much what we're seeing in Aaron Rodgers now. He's bought into Matt LaFleur's system, which is that Shanahan system, and we're seeing the results now, so he'd be my MVP.
Good stuff. Monday morning quarterback Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter. Happy holidays. Happy New Year to you, buddy. We love having you on the show.
Awesome. Happy New Year, Colin, to you and everybody out there now.
All right. So we are so Monday, if the Cowboys make the playoffs, and they may, because I think Washington, if Alex Smith doesn't play, is going to lose. And I think that whoever wins that game, Dallas Giants gets in. And if they do, I can just tell you how the media is going to react. We're not. At least I'm not. I don't think we will. And I'll tell you why I'm going to support the lousy Giants if they get in and the pretty lousy Cowboys if they get in. That's coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Go the extra mile. Your very own upfitted Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. You could win it. FoxSportsRadio.com. Enter until January 24th. It's called the Fox Sports Radio Ultimate Tailgate Rig Sweepstakes. Mercedes-Benz vans. So, I don't know. Some people are, Joy is very competitive. You're an athlete. We're probably weekend athletes now, but we're both.
Well, yeah, I was an athlete.
But we're competitive people.
Definitely.
And I learned this from a very early age from my parents. Like, life's not fair. Put your head down and outwork people. And, like, I don't think life is as full or complete if it's easy. is I like the fight. I like the struggle. I didn't go to Syracuse, a great broadcasting school. I didn't go to Missouri, a great broadcasting school. In fact, I didn't even go in my state. Washington State University was the best broadcasting school. My parents were divorced. I went to Eastern Washington. It cost about $3,800. I paid for some of it myself, and it's absolutely helped define me. I am so much a believer in the struggle's fun. The struggle's part of it. You may not realize it at the time, but it's really fun. And so many people these days are into, that's not fair. Life's not fair. My last name's not Hilton. My last name's, you know, it is LeBron James' kid's going to have it easier than a lot of kids in America. All right. There'll be advantages and disadvantages to that. That's just the journey. And so I can guarantee you Monday what's going to happen. If Dallas wins this weekend, gets into the playoffs at 7-9, or the Giants win, and they can, and they get into the playoffs at 6-10, and the Colts go 11-5 and don't get in, or the Browns go 10-6 and don't get in, here's all you're going to hear Monday. Oh, we got to change the system. This is outrageous. This is not fair. If Dallas has a new coaching staff in a pandemic and no preseason, they have to go to a backup quarterback by early October. They have catastrophic injuries to their offensive line. If Dallas makes the playoffs, it's incredibly commendable. They've gotten every bad break in the league. They got to go to a backup. They got a new coaching staff. Yeah, we have a pandemic. No OTAs and no camp. What? I mean, you watched Dallas in September. It was a clown show. All these teams with new coaches got hosed this year. Joe Judge and the Giants got hosed. No OTAs and no preseason with new coaches. It was totally unfair to those teams. So if they play better late in the year, Giants had to play with a backup, went to Seattle, beat the Seahawks with Colt McCoy. The Cowboys have had to go to Andy Dalton and win. That's incredibly commendable. If you want to talk about fair, it wasn't fair at all that the preseason got canceled when you looked in the summer at the death rate falling with COVID and the hit rate with COVID going down in July and August. Many people argued, play the games. What are you doing? Play the games. We knew the winter, it was going to surge with the holidays and the cold weather. A lot of people were arguing, play the game. They were playing college games and kids were fine. But they didn't. And it was punitive to teams like the Giants. Giants were a mess in September. A mess. Cowboys were a mess. So if they get hot late with backup quarterbacks, God love them, I'm for them. And by the way, if the Colts don't get in despite their glossy record, well, they had their system and their coach. They lost to Jacksonville. No football team on the planet this year has lost to Jacksonville except the Colts. And if Cleveland doesn't get in, that's because they lost to the Jets and this weekend to Mason Rudolph. So I don't want to hear about it. But in baseball, the Dodgers have $181 million payroll. The Pirates, it's $39 million. They don't even have a salary cap. In the NBA, players don't want to play in certain cities. Cleveland's not attractive. Los Angeles is. It's not fair. Toronto won a title in Canada with their taxes and their cold weather in the winter. It's not fair. They won. Cleveland eventually with LeBron won. And it's not fair. LeBron grew up in Akron, right next door, always wanted to be a Cav. So, what sports needs is rules. You can't grab a ball in soccer and throw it into the net. In basketball, you can't tackle LeBron James. In football, you can't jump off sides to get a head start to sack the quarterback. Sports needs rules. It's not fair. It's never been fair. It doesn't need to be fair. The unfairness is the struggle. The struggle's real, and I'm okay with it. So go Cowboys. By the way, the Giants have lost 5-1 possession games. Here's another thing about fair. So Arizona, Cliff Kingsbury comes into the league. He has to coach against Kyle Shanahan twice a year, Pete Carroll twice a year, and Sean McVay twice a year. Do you think that's fair? Belichick got 20 years of a clown show in the AFC East. Dolphins, Jets, Bills, firing guys every 15 minutes. I mean, a huge part of a 20-year dynasty in the NFL was the mismanagement by the Jets, Bills, and Dolphins, who two of the three now have clearly gotten it right in the last few years. But that the whole sport was dominated by one franchise. It was the worst division in football. Bad quarterbacks, bad coordinators, a lot of Rex Ryan. So go for it. The Cowboys, totally commendable. Backup quarterback, pandemic, no preseason, brutal offensive line injuries. I'm all for it. Blazing five, top of next hour. I got some things here. I don't want to give too much away. Hold on. Oh, the air thing today, I'll talk about a little bit later. But so right after our show, Notre Dame plays Alabama. Not going to be close. I just think Alabama's offense is going to do whatever they want. And then Justin Fields, a quarterback for Ohio State, is going to play Clemson. And I do think it's going to be close. I think the bet is Ohio State in the under. But I will say this about Justin Fields, is that he may struggle today. And he has not been good in recent weeks. He was very good early in the season. And then the games were canceled, couldn't practice. And shockingly, this young quarterback has not been as good. All you need to know about Justin Fields, and we've seen this with Josh Allen, and we've seen this with Justin Herbert and a lot of guys. Just ask yourself when you watch him today. Is he big? Check. Is he fast? Check. Is he athletic? Check. Does he have a good arm? Check. He's going to get, and this is no shot at Ryan Day, he's going to get way better coaching in the NFL. Way better. Like we got to stop. Trevor Lawrence will succeed wherever he goes. Justin Fields will be as good as the situation he enters. He may struggle today. He's still going to be the second or third quarterback drafted, and in other years, he'd be number one. Don't beat up on him if Clemson beats up on him. Hour two, Blazing 5 next.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.